Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Casey Coleman, former Chief Information Officer with the U.S. General Services Administration. As you leave your tenure as CIO, I was really interested in understanding the legacy you've left behind in the sense of a strategic vision. So could you give us a sense of the strategic objectives or vision you've laid out for the IT mission support function at GSA?
I really believe that we've achieved quite a transformation. And some of that has been due to the advances in technology that we've benefited from. But we've also, I think, been very thoughtful about putting building blocks in place over time. So, for example, I mentioned the consolidation of all of our common infrastructure support services. If we hadn't done that, we could not be doing the things we're doing today, because that first round of consolidation gave us the ability to manage the entire network as one unit. Before that, it would take us 30 days to patch a system or to implement a critical security patch, and each team had to make their own choices about where to fit that into their cycles of work. And now we can do that with one push of a button. Now everyone has the same image on their machines, and so we can upgrade and support them and secure them much more effectively. And those foundational pieces, even though they're not that glamorous, really allowed us then to lean forward when cloud and mobility and big data and cybersecurity advances came along. We could take advantage of them because we had a solid and well-understood platform to build upon.
I was wondering, what are the key internal or external drivers that shaped your IT strategy?
One of the big drivers has been GSA's goal of leading and of leaning forward and going first when it comes to new technologies. We're far from being the only, you know, leader and thought leader in terms of government IT, but we do try, as an organization that provides IT services to other federal agencies, we try to utilize them as soon as practical, understand the implications of implementing them, understand the security and the legal and the contractual aspects, and be able to go down that path and offer those lessons to other agencies if they're interested in doing something similar. So, for example, in 2011, we moved our email system to a cloud-based solution based on technology powered by Google. And that move was in itself technically challenging and interesting. But a lot of things, because we went really first in that at that scale, to figure out how to set up the contract, how to set up the security protocols and the agreements with the vendor. And all of those aspects to that really allowed us to be successful. And I think that that's been a pattern we've repeated over time. And GSA is trying to go first in many other areas as well. You may be familiar with the renovation of our headquarters building at 1800 F Street and the fact that we've really adopted commercial best practices in the building. Have you been in it by any chance?
I haven't, but I've had we've had folks on, and they've talked about the collaborative environment that you've sought to create and what have you.
It's fabulous. Yeah. It's open and airy. The furniture is modern. It's movable. You can move around the building because there's wireless throughout the building. You can go where your work takes you. And people don't have fixed offices anymore. They book space according to where their work takes them.
Hoteling concept?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So, Casey, what have you done during your tenure to foster an enterprise view and break down silos in terms of the IT mission support function that has allowed your office, as it evolved, to not just support GSA in meeting its mission, but enabling it to be successful at meeting its mission?
Well, I think one of the things has been going back to that change management concept and really giving people opportunities, regardless of where they sit in the organization, to contribute. So we've consciously tried to foster an environment where people feel comfortable speaking up, they feel comfortable questioning an approach, and feel as though there's opportunity to contribute and not have to assume that, you know, the person at the top of the command chain has already thought it through and got the right answer. So we find that you would get much better outcomes from that sort of collaborative, open, egalitarian kind of approach. Another thing that we've tried to do is really be very, very inclusive. So in this most recent round of consolidation, when we created the unified GSA IT team, that involved the unification of several IT offices. There was the OCIO, my organization, and there were business line IT offices for the Federal Acquisition Service, the Public Building Service, CFO, Chief People Officer, and so forth. And all those IT teams came together. And from the beginning, we were really clear that this is not, we said, this is a merger. This is not an acquisition. Mm-hmm. This is peer organizations coming together to create synergy and do something bigger than any one of us could have done alone. And so we even changed the name of the organization. We didn't call it OCIO. We now call it GSAIT because it's something new. Mm-hmm. And it's not legacy, anything else. We've tried to respect the culture and the contributions of the teams that have come together and celebrate what they've done in the past, but really look forward as a new organization creating something fresh and bigger and better than anything that existed before.
And that's a nice segue into this. I want to get your perspective, maybe using your time at GSA, about the importance or how you go about being an IT executive enhancing governance in IT. How important is IT governance, whether it's in your previous role or when you move forward, in optimizing resources and making sure that the IT support function is actually aligned with the overall mission of an agency?
I think that is, it is. It's vital and it is difficult. The ability to, first of all, understand what you're spending, what you're getting for that spending, what are the business and mission priorities you're supporting, and how well are those being aligned, how well is the IT spending being aligned to those. Just getting that baseline view is a challenge. And then once you get that, having a process that's not overly burdensome but still elicits the necessary decisions is a challenge. And I think that we're in a good place on that. We've done an enormous amount of work on governance. We first started about 4 years ago by really revitalizing our most senior governance board, the IRB, Investment Review Board. That's chaired by our deputy administrator, the number two person in the agency. And I think the fact that our deputy spends so much time invested in technology decision-making shows how seriously we take it. And we have made that board a strategic board to set direction, to clarify priorities, to arbitrate differences of opinion about strategic investments. And then we have governance boards that look more at the programmatics. And then we have change control boards below that. So we have a lot of effort invested into governance. And I think we're trying to strike the right balance between not being overly burdensome, but still having the right participation. Because if you don't have the right people in the room to make the decision, that decision won't stick. So it's an ongoing balancing act.
Yeah. And I was wondering, you alluded to a couple of the things that you've done thus far, but innovation has been an important part of your tenure.
Yes.
And I'd like to talk about some of your successes. And what I mean by that is the cloud-based email and the collaboration platforms you've pursued. Mm-hmm. Would you tell us about these efforts and what were some of the benefits you've seen? What were some of the challenges? And how have they resulted in some cost savings as well?
Well, I'll start with our move to a cloud-based email system because we had really the benefit of sort of a sense of urgency within the agency. In 2009, we had an email system that was dying on us. The email system itself was fine, but it was running on servers that were 7 or 8 years old. It was running in, you know, clusters around the nation. It wasn't a single highly available system and faced vulnerabilities. And email had emerged from being just a business tool to being a mission-critical, always-on kind of capability, and we were not meeting that demand. So we had begun some market research, and the Obama administration had announced its cloud-first strategy. And in support of that, we looked at market options for cloud-based services and concluded that that market was mature enough for us to move in that direction. Mm-hmm. And in 2010, we made the award, and in 2011, we implemented it. So our implementation was pretty quick, about 6 months. And in the course of doing that, we had to solve several technical challenges, like how do we establish the boundaries between the controls that we apply and the controls that the vendor is responsible for. So, for example, one of the things we decided is that we, GSA, would remain responsible for all authentication. So users would authenticate into our environment. We would validate that they were authorized to get into the email system, and then we would hand them off to the vendor. And by doing so, we felt like we maintained a really essential control for the government to be able to understand who was having access and in what circumstances. And that allowed us to then do a lot of innovative things like support a much wider variety of mobile devices. So whereas in the past we'd had only one type of smartphone, now we could support a variety of smartphones, a variety of tablets. We gave everyone access to laptops, and people could do their work in a much more mobile fashion. It allowed people to be a lot more collaborative, but it also allowed them, interestingly, to be much more resilient. So when Superstorm Sandy came up the eastern seaboard last year and knocked out power in the New York and the New England area, our buildings were affected. They were flooded. Power was out. If email servers had still resided in those buildings like they did two years prior, they would have been unable to function. And yet, because our folks in those areas had mobile devices and cloud-based email and access to their critical documents, they could keep working. They found whatever local Wi-Fi hotspot they could get to, and they carried on and continued to deliver vital services in partnership with other agencies to those who were affected by that storm. So that's been a great success story and kind of an unexpected benefit from that move to the cloud.
And what about cost savings? I mean, that's an example.
Absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. You bet. The cost to run our in-house system was around $5 million a year, and this is about half that. So over years, for the first several years, we're estimating about a 50% savings.
So you mentioned the mobility initiative, sort of through the anecdote about Sandy and the ability, the resilience, if you will. Yeah. But what is the any location, any time, and any device A3 mobility initiative that you pursued?
We've been pursuing this for quite some time, and it really is broader than just what devices people have. It really, you have to think about the applications and the tools, and you have to think about the security and the data and how to put all that together in a way that's easy for people to use and gives them what they need when they need it. For example, another of the initiatives we pursued back in 2009 was to move the entire agency from fixed voice service to voice over IP. So by doing that, we got rid of all the fixed phone lines. And in fact, we couldn't move back into our building had we not done that, because no one has a fixed space to sit at. So their phone goes with them. It's a soft phone sitting on your laptop. We can move about and have voice service has been an important part of our mobile strategy. We also implemented a two-factor authentication for mobile devices so that we can secure them in a way that people can use them, you know, in the building and beyond. We really think of mobility as something that happens anywhere, not just teleworking at home, but mobile inside our offices, mobile at a local coffee shop, mobile with our clients and customers and stakeholders. We're an agency on the move.
It's a good way to put it. So you did allude to this when we talked about IT governance, but I'd like to talk a little bit more and get a little bit more in depth about what you've done to enhance the IT capital investment process at GSA during your tenure. What have you done to make sure that investment decisions are mission aligned and cost justified?
Well, I would say that's a continuing challenge. But one of the things we've done is to create a life cycle review process. So we've created a process for our critical investments that has four gates. Mm-hmm. And each one of these gates, you have to come before the board and defend and explain the investment. And we make sure that it's proceeding on course before we let it go to the next step with more investment, more commitment. So there's an early commitment gate where you have to come in with the business case, the cost estimate, the mission justification, and it's a joint presentation by the IT program manager and the business executive or mission executive who's benefiting or who's using that service. So we try at every step to make sure that it's not just IT talking, because there really are no IT projects. There's only business projects that are IT enabled. And the next gate is at the point where the first round of funding is approved and you go into development. Now, this is something that it's good for big investments, but it's challenging to do for agile investments. And we're trying more and more to move to agile development. So we're trying to reconcile this idea of gates with the need to have transparency and the right eyes, the right reviews at the right time, with the agile process, which happens rapidly and really is aligned toward creating something that's prototyped or it's beta, putting it out there and letting people use it and see what the result is in incrementing on that. So that's an interesting challenge we're facing right now, is reconciling those two processes.
Yeah, and close to that, I know since our last visit, I hadn't realized you were doing this. Maybe you weren't doing this back then, but zero-based IT budgeting. Why did you start doing that, and when did it occur, and what is it actually?
Zero-based budgeting is just the idea that you start each year with $0, and you build your budget up based on your needs and program requirements to what you need for that year. So you don't start with last year's budget and increment or decrement based on last year's numbers. You start with a clean sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. And it is a challenge to do that because you have to think from the ground up mm-hmm. about what you really need, what you're really spending. And it requires much more analysis and diligence to create that zero-based budget. We're now in our third year of doing this. So we're now working on the 16 budget cycle. And the reason I started doing that is because I really felt like it was clear we were entering a time of budget austerity and of challenging budget times. And I felt like we didn't have the tools and the visibility that we needed to understand where we could make trade-offs to accommodate that more constrained budget environment. So we created that zero-based budget process. It's not a new idea, but it was not the practice before that. We implemented that practice, and we were able to really get down to the penny what we spend on each of our programs and projects and systems and contracts. And now we have a prioritized list of unfunded requests. And as the year proceeds and things come in at, you know, above or below cost estimate, we have much more control and much more assurance that we're funding the right projects, and that as circumstances change or evolve, we can change and evolve the budget with them.
And now, are other IT offices in the federal space using zero-based budgeting for their budget, or were you ahead of the? I mean, I just found it. It's not a new concept, but it's new the way you applied it.
It is,
and I think that's another way you're kind of a change agent in that respect.
Well, if anyone else is doing it, I'm not aware of it. Okay. That doesn't mean it's not happening. But I really,
I thought maybe somebody inspired you to do it, but.
I was just concerned that the circumstances were going to catch up with us and we'd be unprepared, so we tried to get in front of it.
And you got in front of it even before you made the change where you merged the organization. Okay.
Yes.
How did the merger, as you call it, mm-hmm. impact this? Did it make it easier? Since this is the third year you're pursuing it?
Yes. So for the first 2 years, well, actually for the first year, that zero-based budgeting process was just for the legacy OCIO office, and those other IT offices had different budgeting mechanisms. Last year, with that consolidation, we put together a zero-based budget for the entire team, but each office had its own templates and processes and time frames, and really it only came together at the end. Mm-hmm. Now this year, we are starting from the beginning with a zero-based budget for all of GSA IT. So this will be the first year that we really get from day one a zero-based budget that's created for that entire unit.
How is GSA keeping apace with transformative IT advances? We will ask Casey Coleman, former Chief Information Officer within the U.S. General Services Administration, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.